Here's a quick word from our football educational partners over at the Scouting Academy.
Listen, we've said it all the time. If you love the analysis and you're passionate about football, then you really need to check out the Scouting Academy. Whether you're a football coach, aspiring writer, or even aspiring football agent, the Scouting Academy is really a perfect place for you to learn and develop your skills as an analyst. With curriculum that spans over 375 years of coaching and personnel experience, the Scouting Academy offers you a 16-week online course that you can tailor and build to meet your needs and your interests. Whether you're learning about wide receivers or defensive linemen, you can make the experience what you want it to be. Listen, I've said it to you on this podcast many times. I've spent my own money, my own time, and time away from my friends and family because I am just this passionate about this game. And the Scouting Academy is the place where I really feel like I've learned the most I've ever learned about the game of football. It's made me a better analyst. It's made me a better person in terms of the coaching I do on the field. I can't say enough great things about it. If you have any questions about the Scouting Academy, please don't hesitate to reach out to Dan Hatman on Twitter or reach out to the Scouting Academy online via email. I'm open to all questions as well. Heck, I'm still even a student there myself. Please don't hesitate to reach out. I really think that once you learn all the tools and gain the knowledge that they have to offer, I really think you're going to be absolutely excited about the game of football again.
This is the Saturday to Sunday Football Podcast.
This is where it all counts. This is why we're here. This is why each one of us are here.
And now, here's your host.
And we are back. This is the Saturday to Sunday Football Podcast. I am Paul Perticchese, and joining me as always is Mr. Matt Caraccio. Matt, welcome back. The national championship is set, and it looks a little bit familiar.
Well, I mean, we kind of said that already prior to this actual show. I mean, we felt pretty strongly it was going to be, you know, Clemson, Alabama, part four. And that's pretty much what it ends up being. And, you know, I heard some really interesting chatter on the radio today. And a lot of what I'm about to say is other people's thoughts, but I thought they were so poignant. So forgive me if I'm not necessarily, you know, footnoting who it was. But I thought it was really a good analysis, because the 35,000 foot view seems to be a lot of fans are disgruntled by the fact that it's once again, you know, Clemson and Alabama. And it seems to be that there's a lot of, you know, kind of knocking on the door about how broken the system is. When in reality, I really agreed with a lot of the analysts' takes on it. I don't think the system's broken. I think that it just goes back to a lot of what we talked about on previous episodes throughout the year, what we said leading up to this game. You know, it's a self-perpetuating cycle, college football. You know, if you're good, you're in big games. If you're in big games, your brand gets bigger. If your brand gets bigger, you're going to keep getting those recruits. And if you have the culture to sustain those recruits and develop them into football players that are elite at the collegiate level, well, then you're going to keep winning. And I don't necessarily believe it was the wrong four teams. I just think this is what, you know, these two teams are. Clemson and Alabama are really just that much better, I think, than everybody else. And that's just my take. I don't know if the system's broken, like we're missing a team that could have challenged these two. I just think that these are head and shoulders two of the best teams in college football, and they are by a substantial margin.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I'm right there with you. I mean, what are you going to do? I mean, what are you going to change, you know, change how many prospects teams are allowed to, you know, how many recruits they're allowed to bring in?
Four or five stars, you know?
I mean, like, unless they actually took some radical approach like that, which I don't envision ever happening, the pushback would be enormous. I mean, I don't know really what else you can do. Sure, listen, did Notre Dame deserve to be there? Yes, they deserve to be there based on their performance on the field all year. Were they one of the best four teams in the country? Probably not. And we kind of knew that, you know, maybe it was Georgia. Maybe it was Ohio State. I mean, Georgia didn't look like one of the best four teams in the country last night, not to take anything away from Texas, but they were talking a big game the other day, like, you know, like that they should have been playing, you know, Clemson. And then they went out and they didn't really put a stamp on the season like, oh, we should have been there. So I don't know. if it really mattered, to be honest with you, who team three and team four were this year. Clemson and Alabama were the best two teams in the country. The minute all of Clemson's defensive line decided to come back to school last year, and then they got a top-level quarterback in Trevor Lawrence, Clemson was going to be really hard to beat, and then Alabama right now is a juggernaut. But let's not act like Alabama is unbeatable. Georgia had them on the ropes last year. They couldn't put them away in the national championship. Clemson beat them in the national championship once, and they were really close to beating them twice. We've seen Alabama have slip-ups in the regular season from time to time, so it's not like they are literally every single year 12-0. Nobody gives them a game. There's teams that give them games. So I think it is what it is. Teams are going to have to come up with ways to try to play with Alabama, and that's just what it is right now. I mean, these things are cyclical. Before Nick Saban got to Alabama, Alabama was not a good football team. It was not a good football program. I know they historically have been a good team, but they were pretty down in the dumps before Nick Saban got there. And, right now, look at teams like Florida State. I grew up Florida State as one of the perennial every year, top five national title picture, and now they've fallen a little bit on hard times over the last year or two, not up to their standards. And there's other teams like that. Texas is trying to work their way back. It just kind of goes a little bit cyclical, and that's just kind of the way it is. So we're talking about the games. Let's go back to the two playoff games. Let's start with the Clemson Notre Dame game. I don't think there's much to talk about on a Notre Dame side of it, but on the Clemson side, I mean, Trevor Lawrence, I mean, I know you've been singing his praise from when you watched his first high school film. I mean, the goods, I mean, we talked about, not we, but the consensus, the people who do this, talked about Andrew Luck for years and years, just waiting for him to eventually become draft eligible. That is basically what Trevor Lawrence. I saw people on Twitter during the game the other day saying, if Trevor Lawrence was available, he would be the first pick in the draft this year. Off of his freshman year where he didn't even start every game. That's how elite of a talent he is, and he's not eligible for the 2021 draft. I was blown away with his poise, his command of the huddle, his ability to throw with touch and anticipation.
Well, there you go. Can I pause right there? That is one thing that I loved about his high school film. And I think that that's one of those throws that I always look for. When you're watching high school film, because of the level of athlete, you really want to see that type of quarterback where he's leading the receiver and dropping it in an anticipatory spot so the receiver can make yards after the catch. Even on his missed throws, Trevor Lawrence looked great. I'm not trying to spin yarns, but you and I have had these discussions off air many times where I told you I'm sounding stupid. You're like, you can't put him. You can't put him above every college quarterback as a freshman, Matt. That doesn't make sense yet. Like, I swear to God, watch, Paul. I swear this kid can play. And you were like, yeah, no, I think he can play. And then sure enough, this year was like kind of our validation that what we thought we saw ended up being pretty true. I'm so happy for this young man.
Yeah, I mean, it's just remarkable. And, and it's not just him on that Clemson team. It's not like, the defensive side, the leaders on the defensive side are a lot of upperclassmen who are going to enter the NFL draft, but they got more guys waiting in the wings. But I mean, how about some of these receivers? I mean, better than I do, a little bit of their pedigree coming into the collegiate game. I mean, Justin Ross was running wide open down the field, making plays all over the place, six catches, 148 yards, two touchdowns, really impressive. And then T. Higgins, who's going to be one of my favorite wide receivers next summer when we're talking about the 2020 NFL draft. I mean, both of those guys, super impressive. I think they're both future, big time NFL caliber prospects. Then we got Hunter Renfro. All he does is catch first downs, run great routes. I mean, Alabama is probably dreading Hunter Renfro compared to, considering what he's done to them in the past, and then Travis Etienne, who we've talked about, at length this year, going to be one of the top running back prospects in the country next year. Big time home run threat if he gets into the open field. Everything about this Clemson team, I mean, I know they're going to lose defensive guys, but they're set up on the offensive side to be elite, moving forward. Any other thoughts about these guys or anybody else on the offensive side that stood out for you in the Clemson Notre Dame game?
No, I mean, you touched on all the major guys, but I mean, I think that what you saw in this game also, and I'm glad you brought up Hunter Renfro. I had Hunter Renfro as one of the top 10 skilled wide receivers in the country. And I think that this was one of those games where you had a chance to see it. And again, I'm not talking about his skills. I'm not talking about, you know, his size or his physical traits. We all know that those aren't necessarily, you know, anywhere near acceptable levels for the NFL. But he just does so many different things to get open. I think it was a quote that I heard during the game, and I love this quote. Trevor Lawrence, and I quote, "Hunter Renfro is a quarterback's best friend, and that is exactly who he will be in the NFL." So kudos to Hunter Renfro. I think you are a player that is going to continue to shine throughout this draft process. And you know what? I hope you go round five to a team that needs a wide receiver and gets you on a discount, because I think you can be incredibly, incredibly good at the next level. I think he's literally a Jamison Crowder style player in terms of where he'll fit in an offense. But I also see a little of that Tyler Lockett in him. I also see a little bit of those style of players. But I think he is such a tremendous route runner. So T. Higgins reminds me of A.J. Green a lot every time I watch him. You just see that explosiveness in what he does offensively. I think people try to compare him to Mike Williams 2.0. I don't think he's Mike Williams. I think he's better than Mike Williams.
I think he's much more fluid, not to jump in there.
I loved Mike Williams. I mean, you know how much we loved Mike Williams. I think he's better than Mike Williams. And I think Justin Ross is literally, and I know this is going to sound blasphemous, Justin Ross has the potential to be even better than T. Higgins. So I'm just going to throw that out there and just let it marinate for everybody. Justin Ross is explosively good. He was one of my favorite freshmen coming out of the class. I loved him at wide receiver. He was in that elite top four wide receivers in that class, and there were some really good ones. Terrence Marshall Jr. just barely scratching the surface. Justin Shorter, they haven't even seen him yet. Wait till you see him. But Justin Ross was right there in that group. And I really, really like him. And I'm glad everybody got a chance to really see him on a big stage.
Yeah. I mean, and just to go back to it, listen, I like Mike Williams and we really liked him. I think he was our number one wide receiver in that class, but they are very different players. I mean, I know it's sometimes easy to compare, you know, Clemson player. And sometimes I even fall into that trap all the time with certain guys, you know, but when I watch their games, I think very different stylistically, how they win. You know, Mike Williams is all about at the catch point, using that length, using that size, using that body to his advantage, you know, much more in the Alshon Jeffrey style mode. I see T. Higgins as a very different type of player, much more fluid with his movement, his athleticism, you know, and just his overall skill set that he brings, I think, is a little bit more versatile and diversified than Mike Williams. So let's take this to the Alabama game. Alabama, Oklahoma, obviously Alabama jumps out in this game, you know, scoring the first four touchdowns, 28-0. Oklahoma, you know, fights back to make it a ball game, 45-34. You know, the big stories in this, you know, start on the Oklahoma side because there's less to talk about on that side, and then we'll wrap it up with Alabama. I mean, Kyler Murray, listen, I understand he had some issues early in that game. You know, he had some balls batted down at the line, which people immediately want to scream. It's the height. He can't play at the NFL level. I mean, the absolute onslaught against Kyler Murray early in that game was just mind-boggling to me on Twitter because, you saw him. It took some time to settle in. I mean, Oklahoma hadn't faced anything like Alabama's speed and size on the defensive side playing in the Big 12 all year. And I think it took him, it took Lincoln Riley calling the plays, a little bit of time to kind of find their groove. And then it just ended up being a little bit too little too late to have enough time to fully, you know, try to make that comeback. But what I saw Kyler Murray is I saw a guy that if he wants to play football, I think he can still play football. There's some Russell Wilson, you know, ability to play off structure, but like this guy might be small in size and stature, but he's not small in arm talent. He can throw the ball. He's got the strength and velocity to make NFL throws. He can put touch on it when he needs to. He does a great job putting it over the first level of defense and attacking there in that intermediate area of the field. Obviously, his ability with his legs to pick up plays, he doesn't take a lot of hits that are very like smack on, very similar to Russell Wilson. I feel like he knows when to get out of bounds, when to get down. I think in today's NFL, he can be a first round pick and a team could build an offense around him if he so chooses to do that. I understand you got to work with the size component of it, and that's a factor for sure. But all in all, I still think this was more of Murray showing that he has the ability to play rather than some people looking at the early part of that game as he has no place in the NFL. Just go to baseball. You're a good college player and you can't play football at the highest level if you wanted to. I personally didn't see that. I mean, he had 109 yards rushing too. And, you know, in a big spot, he came up big. I know that first quarter was bad, but after that, I saw a player who I thought had the goods. And then the other guy on Oklahoma, and then I'll let you jump in, is CD Lamb. Really impressive what I saw from him. 8 catches, 109 yards, and a touchdown. And the ability to do that with Marquise Brown completely irrelevant in this game due to the injury, you know, all of the defensive attention from Alabama shifted to CeeDee Lamb. And for him to put up that game against that defense, you know, without Marquise Brown on the field, I think speaks volumes of just how much of an impact player he could potentially be, you know, moving forward there at Oklahoma. Thoughts on the Oklahoma guys?
And that wraps up our 2020 draft coverage because those guys are all eligible. I mean, everybody we just talked about over the last like 10 minutes or so are all going to be eligible, obviously. And CeeDee Lamb is not, you know, withstanding. Also, Grant Calcaterra, I think he was a guy that I really liked early on. I mean, we had Mark Andrews there for a long time, and Mark Andrews was a staple of the tight end position. But Calcaterra was a guy that I know there was a lot of talk surrounding him as a freshman being able to take over that receiving tight end role that they coveted in Oklahoma. I mean, especially when you look at the air raid offense and you look at things at like why cross? I mean, that's basically talking about a kind of a move hybrid tight end player who's going to be a staple part of that offense. So when you get a guy like Grant Calcaterra and those guys, you know, it really does do great things for the offense. So it was nice to see him make some really nice catches as well. But no, I mean, listen, I think that that's part of what I'm trying to prove this year, you know, when I'm doing my evaluations. And it's something for everybody to consider as they're going into this evaluation period. You know, I think the game is always going to be more important or larger than the sum of its parts. You can't just reduce a player down to just individual traits and say 1 + 1 = 2. The fact is that there's things that are happening in a game-like situation, information that's being exchanged between what the player sees, what he understands, what he's feeling at that moment, that really just supersedes any specific trait. And when you talk about Kyler Murray, I think, Paul, that's why when you try to reduce him down to a bunch of traits, I think you're going to find that it doesn't really add up to and necessarily an NFL player. But when you put that whole together, when you add up everything and you put it all together and you include all the extra intuitive things he's doing on the field, that's when I think you see that next level ability that could give him the opportunity to compete if he so chose to enter the NFL draft. But we'll see. We'll see how it goes. It's just I'm tired of everybody thinking that they're going to add up 1 and 1 and get 2. The game is larger than just a series of traits. It's that other skill, that other intuition, that perception, that understanding that players begin to bring to the game that allows them to exceed those traits and be very, very explosive on the football field. We got to look for that this year. We got to look for skill.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree 100%. You know, and if we take this to the Alabama side, I mean, who didn't perform well? I mean, Tua, 24 of 27, 318, 4 touchdowns, looked completely healthy. You know, obviously just picked apart that in the passing game. I mean, everybody got going. Devonta Smith right from the get-go, 6 catches, 104 yards and a touchdown. Jerry Jeudy, who I mentioned, T. Higgins before. I mean, Jerry Jeudy's probably off the top of my head going to be in the top 2 or 3 of my favorite wide receiver prospects for the 2020 NFL draft. He got in the end zone. I mean, Henry Ruggs III might be one of the fastest players, if not the fastest in all of college football. He's going to be a beast. He's going to be a guy who's very much on the draft picture in 2020. You know, and then the running game, which is where I kind of wanted to take this for a second, is, listen, I've mentioned, we've had some conversations on here about Josh Jacobs. And between the national title game and then watching film on him over the last couple of days, I don't know if he's going to come out yet, but I did a deep dive into him over the last couple of days. And, you know, if he declares his profile is going to get into the scouting notebook real quick, we'll talk a little bit more about that after. But I watched Josh Jacobs, and, you know, I had heard some whispers from some people that I trust, you know, like, you know, on draft Twitter saying if he comes out, he could be a really high pick. He's really good. I think it was Dane Brugler said it first. And then there was, I think, Matt Miller from Bleacher Report and other guys that, you know, are very reputable in the industry. And I was like, man, I've been impressed with him this year. I just haven't had time to sit down and really watch him a little closer. And then I finally got a chance to. And I mean, the level of impressiveness, what I see, I think he is the number one running back in this class if he declares. I think he's one of the top offensive prospects in this class. You know, I think he's got good size. I think he's got three down potential. He can run inside or outside. I think he can run in the gap scheme or, you know, a zone scheme. I think he's versatile in that way. Explosive, big play threat. He's got the long speed, the burst and acceleration, you know, to start his run, but then to you know, to finish his runs. You know, his athleticism is top notch. He's got lateral quickness, change of direction skills to make people miss in the open field, to get to the outside, you know, and then his finishing ability is so rare to see a player have all that athletic traits, but then his finishing ability, you know, he barrels his head down, finishes runs, breaks tackles, picks up extra yards, you know, really impressive, runs with like he's mad with an aggression level, you know, he's an elite kick returner. He's good in pass protection. He can catch the ball out of the backfield. They've lined them up in the slot. They've run, you know, more than just screens with him, you know. Okay, maybe we haven't seen him carry a heavy workload, but who cares in today's NFL where you're maximizing and using things, you know, I like him more than guys who I really liked last year. Sony Michel, Nick Chubb, Kerryon Johnson. I mean, I watched Jacobs and I'm pointing him like on the level of me liking him, you know, right below guys like Joe Mixon, Dalvin Cook, and Alvin Kamara, who I was huge fans of. And I could see some of that Alvin Kamara explosiveness. I could see some of that Dalvin Cook explosiveness, some of that Joe Mixon explosiveness. I'm just in awe of what I saw when I really sat down to watch him. And I don't think if you just watched Alabama on Saturday, you know, and picked up parts of their games, you truly appreciated just how special of a player he might be. And I was blown away what I saw from him.
I think you need a concentrated dose of some of those players to really appreciate just how versatile their skill set is. And I think when you talk about Josh Jacobs, the thing that impresses me the most is really the fluidity that he displays as a receiver. I mean, really, he can run a lot of great routes out of the backfield. In addition, his hands are very fluid. He can just corral the ball, protect it, immediately transition from receiver to runner after the catch. In the open field, you know, like you said, I think it's that contact fidelity, that ability to really handle collisions and also flourish in collisions. The idea that he understands how to work to half a man, so that way he's really not taking on the whole player, but really taking on just half of the player like you should. You know, he does a good job of preserving himself while presenting the opportunity to extend plays in the open field. I think it was Kyle Franchise over there at DFF that said, you know, that he was a guy that he was really high on. And I remember that, you know, a year or so ago, and I was really hadn't seen a lot of him. And I really watched for him this year, and I've been really impressed. I haven't had the concentrated dose you have, but, you know, I'm going to tell you this. I'm definitely liking him, and when I look at this class, I have every reason to believe he couldn't catapult to the number one ranking.
Yeah, I mean, it's just been really impressive, and I think you probably just come out. I mean, I think right now, really impressive performance there against Oklahoma. I mean, 96 yards rushing, touchdown. Receiving a big play touchdown there. If he finishes it off with a national championship performance, I think he might just go and kind of say, you know what, I'm going to go to the NFL, and I think I might even have a bigger role in an NFL offense than I do here at Alabama, as crazy as that might be. So real quick, a couple other thoughts on some of the other bowl games or players that stood out. I had a chance to watch Daniel Jones for Duke in the Independence Bowl against Temple. He really, you know, put an exclamation point on his kind of a breakout or breakthrough type year. He's declared for the NFL draft. Rumors are he's going to be the 8th quarterback at the Senior Bowl. Even though he's a junior, he has the credits to be there. So, you know, the tutelage from David Cutcliffe is going to go far. He's getting a lot of round one buzz. That's a guy who could be either the 2nd or 3rd quarterback possibly taken. So Daniel Jones was impressed with that game. In the Wisconsin bowl game against Miami in the Pinstripe Bowl, Jonathan Taylor was just an absolute beast in that game. Over 200 yards, multiple touchdowns. He's going to be another guy. I know it's easy to get lose sight of him in the shuffle when you're talking about Cam Akers and DeAndre Swift and some of these other guys that are a little bit more of that athletic profile. But Jonathan Taylor is no slouch when it comes to athleticism, and he's a big-time running back in his own right also. Auburn, we talked about Jarrett Stidham, and he needed to kind of ride the wave of momentum. Well, he did it in the bowl game. You know, really impressive performance. Auburn really handed it to Purdue 63-14. Stidham looked really good in this game, 15 of 21, 373, and 5 touchdowns. He could have run for 500 touchdowns and, I mean, 500 yards and 8 touchdowns if he really wanted to in this game. So that was a very nice performance from Stidham. Iowa State, Hakeem Butler and David Montgomery both really shined. I know Butler's a guy you had a chance to watch a little bit of recently, Matt. In this game, 9 catches, 182 yards, really looked impressive, had an amazing one-hand catch that, you know, was basically all over social media. David Montgomery, like we talked about last week, and you said it's going to time for him to start reemerging, 124 yards and a touchdown, looked really impressive in that game. And then a couple of the other games after the playoff games, I thought Dwayne Haskins in the Rose Bowl yesterday looked really good, you know, really accurate, making all different level throws in the short to intermediate to vertically down the field. You know, he right now hasn't declared, but it sure sounds like he is, and he's going to be very much in the top 5, top 10 discussion in round 1 for the quarterback needy teams, maybe our Giants, maybe a team looks to trade up ahead of the Giants, but Dwayne Haskins looked really impressive nonetheless. And then in the Citrus Bowl, Kentucky versus Penn State, I told you to keep an eye out on the running backs. Benny Snell was the star of this game, 144 yards and 2 touchdowns. Miles Sanders had a little bit struggled to get going in that, only 13 carries for 51 yards. Waiting to kind of hear if Miles Sanders ends up declaring. He's another guy kind of waiting on. And then two other guys I want to make note of. Travion Williams, who, Matt, you were probably the first that I heard was really impressed with him years ago. You know, we were kind of waiting for the breakout, and this year we've kind of started to see it. I don't know if this was his last game in college football, but if it was, against NC State, exclamation point, 236 yards, 12.4 yards per carry, something I don't even usually ever talk about, and 3 touchdowns. Super impressive performance. He's a guy who could catapult himself into the top 5, top 7 running backs in this draft with that type of performance. Really impressive all around. Those were a couple of the guys that stood out in the last round of bowl games here. Matt, any thoughts on anybody that I brought up? Hakeem Butler, I know you had some eyes on recently, or any other guys?
Well, I mean, just quickly to speak to Travion Williams, yeah, I'm really excited for that young man. To be honest with you, you know, he was a player that we were very excited about. We were very excited about what he could bring to the position. I think I had him somewhere in that top, you know, 8 to 10 in terms of most skilled running backs in the country. And again, I think it's because of what he can do and his movement toolbox that he brings. It's his ability to adapt and his ability to solve problems on the football field. There's not many movement problems or spatial problems that he doesn't have an answer for. And he's only going to get better because you never stop earning skill. You keep developing it. So, I mean, I'm really excited for Travion Williams to see what he does at the next level. I think he could be a nice part of a committee or even a lead back in a committee. It all depends upon where he lands. But I think moving to Hakeem Butler, yeah, I mean, I had a time to really put into Hakeem Butler and really kind of spend some time looking at him. And I'll just give you a synopsis. I mean, you know, the redshirt junior, I mean, he's 6'6", he's 225 pounds, which everybody knows, he's a big guy. He ended the season with 60 receptions for, you know, 1,318 yards and 9 touchdowns. And some of his strengths, I mean, obviously the size is incredible because it's what goes along with that. I mean, he has great flexibility, balance, body control, his catch radius, his deep routes are excellent. His contact fidelity and play strength after the catch and also at the catch point make him a real tall order for DBs that are just smaller than him, or even DBs that are long. If you're not muscular enough and you can't man up at the catch point, he's a guy who understands and can use his body to really do a nice job shielding defenders. And I mean that in the highest way. He's not just aware of where his body is. He's actively using his body as a weapon to create an opportunity and throwing window for his quarterback. So he's tremendously skilled at the catch point and also on deep routes. See, I think one of the things that impressed me most about him is that I don't think his, you know, testing is going to be off the charts. And to be honest with you, I could care less what his testing is. I don't think he has acceleration in game film that's really intense. I don't think his change of direction speed in game film is really great. I don't think his releases are really great on game film. And I don't think his blocking is that awesome either. But what I do think that he brings to the table right now, coming into the league, would be that on deep routes, he doesn't have the actual vertical separation speed, that speed to just win a foot race. But what he does is he knows how to stack defenders and use his body to create kind of a three-way go for him down the field. So he can create for his quarterback opportunities to throw deeper and then run underneath the pass. He has an opportunity for the quarterback to miss outside or inside, and he knows how to shield the defender off on his back and make catches. I mean, his catch radius is really very, very impressive considering his size. He can get those balls at his knees. He can get the ball at his waist. He can catch it over his head. He really does have impressive hands. And you know what's really interesting is his muscular coordination to really kind of catch the football and then protect it and transition to a runner is actually pretty fluid and pretty quick, because when you think about a lot of players, they'll catch that football and then there's that half a second delay until they can kind of seat the ball and chassis it so they can secure it and become a runner. He does that really fluidly and all in one motion while still maintaining speed at times. And this is why he's able to get that extra step on players. And that's why his game speed is probably going to be way better than his testing speed. But overall, I think you're looking at a player best suited for a vertical passing game, a play action vertical passing game, but I would also love to see him go to a team that really loves to utilize wide receiver screens. I think that's something where he has enough agility, but also enough collision and contact fidelity where if you're going to try to tackle him, he can take on two or three tacklers. At the NFL level, I'm pretty convinced he can take on at least one tackler by himself. And that's if the guy gets a good contact on him. I still think he can fight for extra yardage. So I'd like to see him in the screen passing game or a vertical passing game, because that's where I think he fits best. And I think he's going to be a complementary or depth player. I don't see him necessarily, you know, as a player that's going to immediately come out and be a top three player. But he could be. So that's why I'm saying a complementary player to depth player as he kind of works through and develops his skill. I could see him kind of being more of a developmental prospect down the line. I think where he fits right now, if he goes to a deep passing game, is he could be a top three receiver coming out. But I do think he's going to be more of a top three to depth player initially. That's my impression of Hakeem Butler. So I know that's, again, blasphemy considering what everybody says about him, but those were my thoughts on him. So, Paul, I mean, I just want to give you one, you know, quick tidbit on one other guy that I talked about. It wasn't in these games, and it's not a real full breakdown, but I'm in the midst of him. Man, Greg Dortch. Wow. There's my analysis. I don't know if that's as technical as the other one, but it's wow. Greg Dortch is really impressive. If you have not a chance to watch the Wake Forest product, he's 5'9", 170. I don't care. I don't care what his size is. I really, really don't. I mean, if you like the Hunter Renfros and you think Hunter Renfro is skilled, or if you like, you know, the Jameson Crowders and the Tyler Lockett's, if you dig those guys, Greg Dortch to me is right there with the same pedigree or ability as a Tyler Lockett. And I love Tyler Lockett, but he's right there. He's a very, 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 very intuitive route runner. He has a great sensitivity for the game in his routes. He knows how to create separation and create space for himself. He knows how to take and afford the advantages that certain coverages give him and what certain formations give him. And he can take advantage of that and exploit defenders. And then in the open field after the catch, I would challenge you to find many kids in college football that were as heavily used as him, because Wake Forest is an RPO team. So he was constantly getting those smoke routes where you would have a lot more like screen passes down the field, right? He would catch the ball underneath. Then the number one receiver, or the number three receiver would block for him. And then he would have to run behind the screen. He routinely made the first guy miss. And I mean, routinely. It's just that he was literally going for a touchdown every time. He's an incredibly interesting wide receiver. I'm going to tell you right now, probably end up being, this is a little bit of a teaser and maybe spoiler, he's going to be in my top 10. He's that good. He's that impressive.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't dug in as close, but in the exposures that I've had, I think I agree with you. I think he's going to be a guy who is definitely somebody who, you know, is going to be in that mix as a top 10 guy, because his skill set is just unique, and it's rare, and it's impactful. And you know how I like those guys. You know, we're looking for those rare things, and he has some rare characteristics, 100%. So a couple of things, Matt, we obviously set up the stage for a national championship game. Is there one or two individual matchups that you're most intrigued by? I know from my perspective, the few matchups I'm looking forward to seeing is I want to see what Josh Jacobs can do running and the Alabama run game as a whole against that Clemson D line. Those guys were going to all be first round picks. How does Jacobs look? And then how does Tua handle the pressure that Clemson D line is going to bring? And is his ankle 100% that he needs to have that mobility to play off structure? I think are the two things I'm most looking forward to on that side. And then on the other side, how does Trevor Lawrence handle the moment? Because he looked like he was a 10-year pro the other night. How does he handle the national championship, Alabama, that defense, that pedigree, and Nick Saban? I think those are the three in particular matchups that I'm most intrigued by. I'm going to say Alabama by a touchdown. I think it's going to be another barn burner.
I tend to agree with you. And I think when I kind of look at the matchups, you know, I think Trevor Lawrence is obviously a very intriguing one because this is a young man who's never not been number one. I mean, he's never not been number one, not just at his position, but overall in terms of high school players. He's been considered number one since, I don't know, maybe the day he threw a football, because he really has been nothing but rated number one across the board. It really wasn't until the Elite 11 when he lost to Justin Fields in the MVP race that he was ever number two. So, I mean, to know that this, you know, you spoke about it, but that I think you saw a lot of what number one your whole life looks like. I mean, you're just number one all the time. So, I mean, now you're in the moment. I mean, now you're in the moment where you can literally seize the moment and truly put a definitive exclamation point on probably one of the biggest moments in your football career if you were to win that game, you know, and really, 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 really announce your arrival, so to speak. And I got to tell you something. I just really can't wait to see what he does against a really challenging secondary. We know Nick Saban likes to bring the heat. I think it was James Light who was talking about it on Twitter. He's an excellent follow if you don't follow him. He was going through some of the blitz packages that, you know, Alabama likes to bring, and there's going to be a lot of safety blitzes, a lot of corner blitzes, a lot of things that they're going to do. In fact, honestly, if you actually have on DVR, the first blitz, I think that Notre Dame brought at Trevor Lawrence, it was like that first corner blitz, if you can kind of remember, it was one of the first series that they had. You might have noticed that Trevor Lawrence did almost a Deshaun Watson-esque spin move, something that I wasn't really necessarily giving him credit for enough. I mean, I knew he was very mobile, but I didn't know he was like going to be able to do that. And it just surprised me because here was the very blitz that I think James Light was talking about in his actual, you know, Twitter thread. And it was happening on the first down of what Notre Dame was trying to do to Clemson. And Trevor Lawrence spun right out of it, still made a pass, and still looked comfortable in the moment. So even under duress, I mean, he really brought it and he was still able to do it. So I'm excited to see that. And of course, any of those, you know, Clemson wide receivers going against that Alabama secondary, I want to see what they do. I want to see what the T. Higgins of the world do, Justin Ross. I want to see what they do. And Travis Etienne, let's see what you can do running against a line that's really going to bring it. I mean, in every level. So you're running against a really hard front seven. Let's see if Travis Etienne can really show his versatility, because I'm sure they're going to want to kind of, you know, sabotage the blitzing schemes of Alabama by creating those kind of opportunities with their formations and leverages and and tempo to try to get Alabama into more of a vanilla coverage so that they can really kind of maybe attack early. And I think Travis Etienne's versatility is going to have to be on point for that to happen. So I'm kind of interested to see what they do with Etienne to try to kind of destroy the Alabama blitz scheme.
Yeah, I mean, listen, both national championship games they played were epic. Last year, they played in the semifinal game, and Alabama pretty much controlled that game start to finish. And, you know, Kelly Bryant and the Clemson team just really couldn't get much going. I think this year, Trevor Lawrence is an impact player and is going to be able to get some against Alabama. And I think it's going to be much more like those two national championships where we saw Deshaun Watson really give Alabama all they could handle in that first one and then come away victorious in the second one. So I'm excited for next Monday night for sure. So, Matt, let's transition over to the Devy Slant for this week. And it's more about what we talked about last week. Those high school all-star games are about to take place this week. And we said it's a great exposure to start learning about the next wave of guys. Many of them probably going to be in the freshman notebook once you really get going on that. And that's out, you know, later on in the, you know, late February or sometime in March scenario. But kind of just set the stage for what's going on this weekend in, when are those games and some guys maybe to keep an eye out for.
Well, I mean, as soon as you possibly can, you want to go ahead once you hear this episode and you want to go to your DVR and you want to set for the first game, which is going to occur tomorrow night, January 3rd, 2019. It's the Under Armour All-America game, and I'm sure it's going to be televised more than once, so you want to make sure you find one of those exposures that are available for you. But the Under Armour All-America game really has had some incredible quarterbacks, and this year it's no different. I mean, we're going to have Bo Nix, who's committed to Auburn. He's an outstanding quarterback. He won he was the runner-up, actually, in the Elite 11 MVP race, and he really was outstanding in every respect. He's a guy that's grown on me as I've watched more and more of him. Jaden Daniels, who's currently still undeclared, but he may very well declare during this game. Very interesting quarterback out of San Bernardino, California. He's a very interesting prospect. Also, Zach Calzada, an Elite 11 guy who people were really rallying behind early, Texas A&M commit. He's going to be interesting. At the running back position, Devin Ford from Stafford, Virginia. He's a Penn State commit. He's incredibly interesting to watch. I think you'll love him. Jerrion Ealy, the Ole Miss commit. He's from Jackson, Mississippi. Noah Cain, running back, undeclared currently, but he's from Bradenton, Florida. And you know how they, Bradenton, Florida, and you know in Florida, they can have running backs that are outstanding. And he's actually mans the backfield at IMG Academy with a player who won't be playing in this game. He'll actually be playing in the other high school All-America game. But honestly, Noah Cain is a guy that you have to watch. At the wide receiver position, looking at the Under Armour All-America game, one of the guys I really loved for a long time, RJ Henderson. RJ Henderson is currently undeclared. He's from Richmond, Texas. He's a very interesting player, very skilled player at the position, understands how to create separation, not necessarily the same athletic tools as some of these other guys, but still incredible. John Dunmore, another wide receiver that I really like from Delray Beach, Florida. He's a Penn State commit. I really like what this kid brings to the game. And Theo Weiss, a really top-tier wide receiver. He's currently committed to Oklahoma. He's out of Allen, Texas. He's a guy that you really, really, really want to watch. And Elijah Higgins, wide receiver from Austin, Texas. He's currently undeclared. He's a guy that you want to keep on your radar as well. At the tight end position, you know, Braden Liebrook, okay, from Chandler, Arizona. He's currently committed to Texas as well. He's very interesting. Hudson Henry from Arkansas and Keon Zipperer from Lakeland, Florida, who's currently undeclared as well. These are some guys at all these positions that you want to watch and so many more. I always look to be surprised. As we move on to the next game, this is happening on Saturday, January 5th, 2019. It'll be at 1 p.m. Eastern on NBC. This is the 2019 Army All-America game. And the East team has some incredible players at the quarterback position. Guys that I'm going to be watching is Sam Howell right now. I love Sam Howell. He's a very interesting guy from the Elite 11 contest that really kind of grew on me. Graham Mertz as well, another quarterback who's going to be playing for the East. And of course, Tua's little brother, Tualia Tagovailoa. Talia is this just an incredible player. He really was. He had scouts at the actual Elite 11 talking about how it's just amazing that the Tagovailoa boys are just all, they all look like carbon copies of each other in terms of the way they play. So to think that Talia is now committed to Alabama and he's going to be joining his brother, it's just interesting to see what happens. A very interesting thing, they have Quavarius Crouch, who is considered one of the top recruits in the entire country. He's actually listed as a running back here, where many people were talking about him possibly playing linebacker at the next level. I'd be interested to see if they're just kind of field testing him at the position or if this is a legit positional change. But Quavarius Crouch is unbelievable. 6'2", like 230, moves like a gazelle, and he's just like a horse in every way. Another player to keep in mind at the running back position, of course, Trey Sanders, who I said earlier, his running mate in the backfield, IMG Academy in Florida, was Noah Cain, who's going to be playing at the Under Armour All-America game. Trey Sanders will be playing here at the Army All-America game, and Trey Sanders is amazing. I think he's one of the best I mean, he is the best running back by many measurements in the country. I think his film lives up to that. So I'm really excited to see what Trey Sanders does. At the wide receivers position, several people that stand out to me. Dominic Blaylock, absolutely interested to see him. Jaden Hasselwood, considered by many as the top wide receiver in the country. Also, looking down a little bit further, I'm really interested in seeing what Frank Ladson does. Frank Ladson's been getting a lot of love. I like him on film. I'm interested to see what he does in this game as well. At the tight end position, you've got Tyler Fromm and Kyle Bildoe. On the west side, you know, from a quarterback perspective, Ryan Helinski is very interesting to me. I really like what he brings to the table. Grant Gunnell, I'm extremely interested to see how he looks. And of course, Spencer Rattler, who was the Elite 11 MVP, will be playing for the Western team. At the running back position, Breece Hall, very interested to see what Breece Hall does. He's a very interesting prospect. Trajan Bridges at the wide receiver position. Jalen Ellis at the wide receiver position, as well as Garrett Wilson. Garrett Wilson, if you heard my early homage to Greg Dortch, then you're going to love what you see from Garrett Wilson. I know I've heard peeps of it all over the place. Some people think he looks like an Odell Beckham Jr. coming out of high school. I'm not necessarily going to go there because I don't really know what Odell looked like coming out of high school specifically. But he is a very, very precocious, skilled beyond his years wide receiver. Again, a guy who understands how to separate and create separation. Excuse me. He's not somebody who just tries to out-athlete you. And at the tight end position, Austin Stoner, he's a very interesting player at the tight end position, maybe one of the best in the country. He's a guy to keep on your kind of docket as well. So this was just kind of a tidbit of some of the guys that have stood out to me in my own film review, guys that I've seen that have popped for me, even though their finals aren't really done, all their final evals. For all of this information and much, much more, you can visit each of these teams' websites, each of these games' websites to see complete roster breakdowns, commissions, size, weight, everything that goes with it. So Thursday night, January 3rd, it's Under Armour All-America game time. Make sure you got it on DVR. And then on Saturday, we get kind of the dessert of the actual bunch and we go to the Army All-America game. Both rosters are stacked. I think it's going to be a really fun game.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. You know, I talked about how this is really my initial exposure to these guys who are going to be impacting. I mean, we're talking about freshmen, Trevor Lawrence and, you know, Justin Fields and all these guys this year. Well, my initial exposure to a lot of these guys, besides Matt kind of chirping in my ear, telling me, oh my God, you got to check this guy out, was these, you know, high school all-star games, you know, watching so many of these guys who are making an impact in college football this year. It's a great way to get exposed to these guys for your Devy leagues, to start prepping for years in advance in your dynasty leagues, or just as a general college football fan, you know, some of the next stars that you're going to be seeing sooner rather than later, as we see more underclassmen and more freshmen in particular really start, you know, hitting the ground and making an impact in college football much quicker than it used to be when it was much more of a junior and senior level thing and occasionally a sophomore. Much different now with a lot of these incoming freshmen making an immediate impact right out of the gate. So with that, let's turn to the final kind of like short segment of the night. And it's kind of, we haven't mentioned in a while, the Saturday, Sunday premium notebooks. Obviously, they've been out since the end of the summer. Remember, for $9.99, you get access to all four notebooks. You get the 2019 scouting notebook, which has player profiles on over 20 quarterbacks, over almost 25 running backs, over 20 wide receivers. And, you know, we're closely pushing in on, you know, like 15 or 16 tight ends right now. You get, you know, strengths, weaknesses, how they win, scheme fit, NFL role, NFL projection, you know, by position, broken down more into receiving ability, rushing ability for quarterbacks, you know, arm talent, decision making, you know, et cetera, wide receivers, route running, you know, ability after the catch, you know, at the catch point, all that stuff. And you get the scouting notebook, you get the rankings notebook, which has our draft eligible rankings. It has our dynasty rookie rankings. It has our Devy rankings. We put our tiers that we really work hard at, you know, in between the Senior Bowl and the combine is when we do our tier shows, our tier buster shows. That's when we make our tiers. We update those tiers right up until draft weekend. So that's all that in the rankings notebook. You get access to those two immediately. And then, you know, I mentioned it before, the freshman notebook, late February or sometime in March, you get player profiles on, you know, top 40 or 50 incoming freshmen. And then the draft projections notebook, your TV guide for draft weekend, tabs for every single position, offense and defense, you know, their metrics, their combine numbers, some notes on the player, all their measurements, and obviously a projection where I expect them to go, not my rankings, but from everything I'm able to gather, trying to project accurately how they're going to come off the board, tabs for the first round, the top 100, and then every pick in the NFL draft. You get access to all four of them for $9.99. We've had a nice little surge here since the season ended. We greatly appreciate all those people who put out, and we're constantly adding more. If you already have the notebooks, you will see in it at certain tabs, it says coming soon or in progress. We have really been grinding some guys that we didn't watch in the summer who now we have had eyes on. I know me personally, at the running back position, I already talked about Josh Jacobs before. If he ends up declaring, his profile will immediately be completely filled in and updated. Other running backs that I've watched and had film studies on, Darrell Henderson out of Memphis, really intriguing player. I think he could be a late round three or somewhere early on day three type prospect. He's got some quickness. He's got some burst. He's got a good size and frame to him, but he's got some explosiveness to him. Solid receiver out of the backfield. Henderson is an intriguing guy out of Memphis. Dexter Williams is going to be at the Senior Bowl. We saw him in the playoff game there for Notre Dame. More of a two down between the tackles, thumper type guy. He's had some really long runs this year as a product of that Notre Dame O-line kind of creating some massive holes. Very similar to Josh Adams last year, but I don't know if he always plays up to his size and strength. I want to see a little bit more out of him, but I think he's more of a two down type player. We'll see him a little bit better and get a little bit clearer picture of him at the Senior Bowl. I think he's more of a day three prospect. He's going to be added to the notebook. I just finished watching Zach Moss, waiting on word if he's going to declare out of Utah. Intriguing prospect. Another guy. He reminds me of a little bit smaller Samaje Perine. Strong, physical. He has shown a little bit more quickness this year than last year when I watched him. You know, that forward lean, fighting for yards, bouncing off guys, absorbing contact well. I think he's another guy, not much of a receiver, so more of a two-down player. So those are the running backs I've watched. I have on the docket coming up Darwin Thompson out of Utah State and Elijah Holyfield out of Georgia. If Holyfield declares, he will be added into the mix there. So if all those guys end up declaring, we're talking about, there'll be close to 30 profiles. Obviously, once we know who's official, we'll kind of separate the tabs with the current draft prospects and then the draft eligible guys that didn't declare. We're not going to take those profiles off of the notebook. You could start getting a leg up already on what we thought about these guys before the season started. In the quarterback landscape, Dwayne Haskins is going to be added. We've talked about him at length, not going to get into him tonight. You know, top-notch guy. He's going to be added if he officially declares. I had a chance to watch Gardner Minshew out of Washington State. He's going to be at the Senior Bowl. I walked away impressed with him, and he actually jumped up to my eighth draft-eligible quarterback prospect, and that's including Kyler Murray, who's a unique scenario. If he decides to do football, he will be added to the scouting notebook. He is in the rankings as of now. But Minshew has a chance to be the seventh or eighth rated quarterback on my board. You know, I got some Colt McCoy, Case Keenum vibes with a little bit of splash of Tony Romo in there. So I know I'm a little bit all over the place, but his ability to play off structure, got pretty good athleticism. He's accurate in the short to intermediate, but he's not afraid to push the ball a little bit outside the numbers and vertically down the field. And he has the arm talent to do it. I'm not saying it's elite or great, but he's got above average to good arm talent to make those throws. You know, obviously he's got to learn to come from that system that he plays, but more and more NFL teams are using that air raid type concepts, the spread type concepts, but he's got to, you know, I need to see some growth in terms of progression. You know, last year we talked about Baker Mayfield. While he played in a system similar, he did go for progressions and you saw that. Minshew, I don't see it as often, but I don't think he's incapable of doing it. I think he has a chance to be a round three, late round three or early day three type prospect, and I think there's a place for him in today's NFL where he could be a quality backup quarterback, spot starter type. I think he's probably going to look really good at the Senior Bowl. He might be one of those guys that really does well in the game setting itself. He doesn't have any trait that's elite that's going to maybe pop into practice, but I think Minshew could be, you know, pretty good in the game setting itself. So I'm kind of excited to see him down there. And the only other quarterback I'm looking to get eyes on, and hopefully it'll have added to the scouting notebook over the next couple weeks is Easton Stick out of North Dakota State. He's going to be down at the East-West Shrine Game, so we'll talk a lot about him but when we preview that in a couple weeks. And then the tight end position, I've had eyes on a lot of guys from Dawson Knox to TJ Hawkinson, Mitchell Wilcox, Irv Smith, who I've talked a lot about, and most recently, Jay Sternberger. I've walked away impressed with all of those guys. I'm not going to talk about Irv Smith. Talked about him a lot. If he declares, he's going to be added to the notebook. OJ Howard 2.0, but just a little bit smaller, I think, in height and frame. But the guy who really popped for me is TJ Hawkinson out of Iowa. You know, I walked away very much with a Hunter Henry type vibe as maybe the most well-balanced tight end in this entire class if he comes out. Definitely more well-balanced than his teammate, Noah Fant, who I think is almost a completely different position. I said Noah Fant is much more like an Evan Ingram who needs to refine his route running, while Hawkinson can play in line. You can line him up outside. Dangerous red zone weapon. You know, good hands. Better athleticism than you expected when you first start watching him. Good catch radius to the ability to extend. I think he has a chance to be a late first round pick or early second round pick. That's how much I was a fan of his game, which would potentially mean Hawkinson, his teammate Fant, and Irv Smith, if he declares, could all be first round picks. That's how high all of a sudden this class has the capabilities to be. And we didn't think we'd see another class that could potentially have three first round picks and like we did 2 years ago, but I think it's possible. Dawson Knox is already declared out of Ole Miss. I think he's a guy that's got some untapped upside. The stats don't really jump out at you, but he's athletic. He could attack the seam. He can go up and catch the pass. I think he's going to be a guy you're going to hear a lot more about in the pre-draft process because I think he's going to test well down at the combine, and he's going to start to rise a little bit that he could be a round three or round four prospect. Mitchell Wilcox still weighing on whether or not he declares. All of these guys are going to be added to the scouting notebook. Mitchell Wilcox out of South Florida, another guy could be a round three, early round four guy. Love his ability to get the attack down the seam, get vertical, uses his hands to extend away from his body, put up a really good statistical year this year. And then Jay Sternberger, I just finished watching him. Great size, great athlete for his size, really productive red zone weapon, good athleticism. You know, all these guys got to refine their blocking techniques, and there's such limited exposures. I don't want to say whether they can or can't because it's just, I don't have the film, in-depth film of their blocking to really make a definitive statement on these guys. But a lot of these guys got to, you know, fix their blocking a little bit, but a lot of these guys are weapons. And I'm blown away with how deep this tight end class. I mean, I have Caleb Wilson down 9, Isaac Nauta 10, Alzi Mack 11. And I really like those guys. And that's how deep this could potentially be if everyone declares. So all of those guys are going to be in the notebook sooner rather than later if they declare. Matt already talked about the guys he's working on. Greg Dortch, Hakeem Butler. I know there's other guys. Jalen Smith, I think, has been added in that. David Sills is in progress. Matt, any thoughts just on the notebooks in general or anything else you got?
Yeah, I disagree with everything that you said about all the players you mentioned. So what we're going to have to do. No, I say that because, you know, what's really interesting is that I think the one untapped reasoning to do all this is because we basically take leads, initial leads on doing certain players in certain positions, but then we go back and we recheck everybody's. I mean, those tiers and everything that we come up with later in the season, that's our own thoughts. You know, we really don't look at what the other person wrote. So, I mean, it is really interesting. I think what you really do get in this particular package, and it's something to highlight one last time, is you will get two unique perspectives. Yes, we agree on certain things because Paul and I maybe see the game of football in certain ways the same, but that's about it. It doesn't mean necessarily that he's highlighting the same traits I will. Maybe we will, maybe we won't. We try to make sure that you're getting parity to the best of our ability. Paul does his, I do mine. Then we kind of look on those shows for the very first time at what our rankings are based on our own film study. So that's kind of what we try to share with you in these notebooks and go through that process. So yeah, I mean, please, I think it's a great product. We really put our heart and soul into it. We really do stand by what we do. It's our authentic takes. We're not rewording anything or saying anything. Yeah, listen, sometimes you might hear a name from somebody else out there in social media that you haven't looked at, and maybe that's about it. But we really dig in and do our own work to try to give you our authentic takes, because that's hopefully the information we can bring to you. So, Paul, honestly, I'm really excited about the evaluation season. I'm psyched to begin looking at a lot of these players. You know, I mean, we were talking about Josh Jacobs earlier, Greg Dortch. Yeah, I'm just excited to see these players and see where they're going to kind of kind of fill in. And I can tell you specifically, you know, I'm really focused this year on skill. That's really where I'm focused. I mean, it was interesting. I don't know if you caught it, Paul, just to kind of end the show a little bit, but I put out two tweets taking some polls on social media just to see where people stood on what their perception of an evaluation should be. And most people stood out and said, hey, listen, I think it should be on their current skill level. Okay, that's what it mostly should be about. Okay. And then I saw people talk about comps, and most people thought comps should be their future potential and what they should be. And I think from those two insights, I would take away this and say, you know, I'm hoping to do exactly what you just kind of outlined, Twitter world, is try to give you the current skill level, because development of skill, I can't project. I don't know what's going to happen, and no team can. I don't know what their actual background is going to look like if they were to participate on a certain organization other than another. I don't know. So my best guess is to tell you exactly what they're capable of right now. And you know what? That's how I'm going to rank them. I'm going to rank them based on that right now. Obviously, post draft, we see where they end up. That changes this picture a little bit, but I want to know right now, where are they in terms of skill level? And in terms of comps, I mean, Paul's way better at using comps than I am. I know for a fact comps for me speak to the very thing that I'm trying to do, which is tell you skill. Because I think when people use comps, I think they're pointing to that understanding that there's more than just the traits themselves that we know is about that player. Like, there's something that I can't put into words that makes me feel like he's Antonio Brown. And I'm hoping to try to give you insight into what that feeling might be without the comp. So I'm the non-comp guy, and Paul will be the comp guy, and hopefully somewhere in there you guys have some fun and you guys get some information out of it.
Yeah, I mean, and when we're talking comps, I know for me, my comps usually are very much in the framework of stylistically who they remind me of. It's, you know, and I try to frame that all the time. Like, I just talked about TJ Hockenson. Stylistically, he reminded me of Hunter Henry, how he's utilized, his body type, his strengths. Do I know if he's going to be as good as Hunter Henry? No idea. So many other factors go into that. You know, Matt just mentioned Antonio Brown. You know, somebody can comp somebody to Antonio Brown in terms of stylistically how he plays, how he wins. It doesn't mean they're going to have Antonio Brown's career. You know, so I know for me, my comps usually are stylistically who they remind me of from a facet of things, from their body type to their size, to their stature, to their strengths, to how they win, you know, to just, you know, from watching so much pro game and then studying college guys. Ooh, that guy reminds me, his movement skills, his skill level in that regard remind me of that. His usage reminds me, or I think his usage could be like this at the next level. And that's kind of what we're looking for. And then just one final note on the notebook, guys, is there's a lot of going back. We just talked a lot about guys I just recently watched who weren't in the notebook back in August. But this is the time now, after the Senior Bowl, between the Senior Bowl and the Combine, that's about a 5 to 6 week stretch when we cycle back and watch all these guys that we watch in the summer that we haven't dug in and done full blown film analysis this year from their new games, besides watching some games on regular TV. So that's why rankings and the notebook will change. And it's a year long process. I mean, what we said in August, some of those things hold true, but not every single thing. If every single thought that Matt and I had in August stayed true, we'd probably be somewhere making a lot of money with our projections. It's a growing process, constantly evolving and changing. And we kind of, you know, a player can change very much in 1 year. And that's why we got to cycle back and watch these guys who we watched in the summer. And maybe we've seen a little bit this year, but we got to dig in deep again to see if anything that we saw in the summer has changed, has developed. Maybe he's fixed an area we had concerns about. Maybe he's taken a step back. Those are all things we have to look for. So it's a big process. Over the next couple months, we will continue to update, change, and make it better and better for you, giving you our honest takes, like Matt was talking about before, from my perspective, from his perspective. And sometimes they match and sometimes they don't. But that's the beauty. We get on here, we talk about it, we share our ideas, we learn from each other, just like Matt and I are constantly trying to learn from so many other great people in the industry and out there as well. So, Matt, any final thoughts or want to wrap it up?
No, I just want to appreciate everybody out there. The communication has really been kicking up. Thank you so much. Please continue to reach out for us. We really do enjoy kind of interacting about players and sharing questions and ideas. And again, like I said before, as you guys are watching these guys on film, I hope you guys enjoy the ride. Watch these guys solve these problems on the field. Everything is a problem. How they have to beat this guy in this route, how they're going to win against this coverage, how they're going to find a gap against this defense running this play. They got to be able to problem solve. The best problem solvers should be the best NFL players. So let's see how that kind of theory meshes up.
Yeah, I mean, it's fun. This is such a great time. I mean, you know, next week, guys, there's no NFL Rookie Report to wrap out the season, but we got two special shows next week. We're really going to dig deep into covering our final thoughts on the rookie class, you know, moving forward, projection out, like who would be buying, selling, kind of a year recap with a couple special guests. So really excited for that. You know, then obviously the following week, we'll be previewing the East-West Shrine Game, and then we'll be recapping that, and then right in the Senior Bowl. You know, this is a busy couple of weeks here. You know, we're definitely going to have to fit in somewhere some discussion about the high school games. So there's a lot going on in the next couple of weeks. And then there's a little bit of a lull as we get ready for the combine that now is about four or five week separation, which we're kind of, you know, we'll be putting out shows every single week, getting ready for that combine. That'll be our tiers. And then obviously combine previews. But, you know, it gives us a little bit of a lull to really dig into the film component of it without there being games every single weekend to be watching. So it's fun and exciting. And we'll be here every single week and, you know, enjoying the ride with you guys. So on behalf of Matt, on behalf of our sound tech engineer, David Nakano, and myself, thank you for joining us. And we look forward next time taking you from Saturday to Sunday.